Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m. It's Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a jokey time. That'll be coming up. We're going to talk about otherwise good movies, but with one absurd scene. Got a bunch of those. We got some iconic movie scenes that weren't planned and some casting decisions that made fans angry. A bunch of movie stuff that we're going to be talking about this morning. And speaking of movies, it is that time to review the new movies. Jim is off this week. Jim Leskowski is off this week. So it'll just be me and Eric talking about the new movies. And also, Eric will be telling us a little bit more about the rest of the movies that he saw at South by South. South by Southwest at the film festival. So and also Eric has got have an announcement about the Chicago Critics Film Festival, which is coming up in May. And let's welcome Eric back to the show. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Why don't we start with the announcement of the Chicago Critics Film Festival? Give everybody all the details when it is, and you guys have started to announce some of the titles, correct?
Yeah, on Friday we announced the first seven titles that we're going to be playing in the festival this year. It takes place, again, at the Music Box Theater from May 17th to the 23rd, and full passes are on sale right now at the Music Box Theater website, as well as the ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com website. So get in on that, because those tend to go. We're really excited just with what we've announced so far, and we're really gearing up over the next 5 or 6 weeks or so and filling out the rest of the lineup and announcing the full schedule.
All right, and so what are some of the titles that you guys have released so far?
Well, some of the ones I have, some of these that we've talked about at Sundance, a movie called The Farewell with Awkwafina. That was a big favorite of mine at the festival this year, a favorite of a lot of people, actually. So that's going to be a real highlight of the festival. We're also showing a surprising film that none of us ended up seeing at Sundance, but we ended up getting a chance to see it afterwards. This really terrific movie called Light from Light stars Marin Ireland and Jim Gaffigan in a dramatic role about basically like a medium, like a ghost hunter legitimately goes into people's homes trying to not just find out information about potential ghosts that are living in their houses, but also just trying to discover for herself whether or not there is something to the all the talkings of the afterlife. It was a movie that just snuck up on all of us, and we can't wait for people to see it, because I think there's going to be a real emotional attachment to this movie, and Gaffigan is really good in it.
Okay. I like Jim Gaffigan a lot anyway.
Yeah.
So, all right, that's cool. What else?
The Nightingale, Jennifer Kent's follow-up to The Babadook.
Oh, boy.
We're going to be playing. Yeah, and if Light from Light makes them feel, good, this one's going to, knock them back in their seats.
Yeah, well, I will definitely be attending.
Yeah, you're going to love it.
Yeah.
You're going to love it.
Yeah.
We're also showing a film called Manos, a film that I did not see, but it's a kidnapping drama, kind of a Lord of the Flies type kidnapping drama that stars Julianne Nicholson. That got rave reviews at Sundance, and a couple of our critics was like one of their favorite movies. So we're going to be showing that. Them That Follow, which also has Jim Gaffigan in it, but it's a film about Pentecostal preacher played by Walton Goggins and the kind of Romeo and Juliet type relationship that's going on in their compound. In Fabric is the new film from Peter Strickland, who did The Duke of Burgundy. Mm-hmm. It's a horror film set in a... It's basically if Phantom Thread was a horror film.
Okay.
Phantom Thread was a horror film.
Phantom Thread was kind of a horror film.
Kind of. Yeah. A little bit. Yeah. Yeah. We are going to be playing on film 40th anniversary presentation, 35 millimeter of Ridley Scott's Alien.
Oh, God, 40 years.
40 years.
Man, oh, man.
Yeah.
Wow. So, that would be that would be the 40th anniversary of Phantasm, too, because they came out at the
same,
they were out at the same time, I remember.
Mm-hmm.
It was a particularly good year for horror.
There's a lot of good, 79, pretty good year for a lot of horror and sci-fi and fantasy and a lot of great stuff that year.
So 35 millimeter Alien, which would be, so that's great. Now you've got the $150 passes that are available now, and that's all, that's all access, correct?
Yeah, that's so the pass will get you into the entire program, so and first in line as well. So you people are going to want to scoop that up.
Okay, and so there you guys are going to announce more films, obviously. There's going to be special events, and then you guys always get directors and stars of the movies to show up, I'm sure you guys are working on that as well.
Yeah, we're working quite hard on that, and we got really some real great possibilities this year that we're working on, that we're trying to work out some scheduling for, including some of the films that I just talked about. So fingers crossed for all of that. So probably sometime, probably in like mid to late April, give or take. We don't have a date set yet because we're always kind of fixing stuff up right up until the last couple hours. So sometime mid to late April, we will announce the full lineup and the full schedule, which will be at the Music Box Theater.
Okay. And you can check it out at the Music Box Theater and the Chicago Critics Film Festival. It is May 17th through the 23rd at the Music Box. And I can't believe it, because it's just the 7th annual Critics Festival.
Can you believe that?
Wow.
It's crazy.
Yeah, time just flies, man.
I know.
Wow, it's crazy. All right. So, okay, cool. Well, that's going. Go to the Music Box website for more information about that. And again, as things get scheduled, more announcements will be made on that website. And, of course, here on the show, too. We'll get Eric to talk about that as well. So, very exciting stuff. All right. Well, we got the box office a little bit later on. And then, you got more movies to tell us about from the South by Southwest.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, why don't we start here with... I did not see... Wonder Park, nor did I see 5 Feet Apart.
Me neither.
So the two movies that we are going to review, we both saw. These were the two that we saw.
Okay.
So why don't you start with Gloria Bell?
Okay. I think I might have talked about this from the Toronto Film Festival last year, but this is a remake. Same director, Sebastian Lillo, did a film called Gloria a few years ago, which I think played the Chicago International Film Festival. I think that might have been where I saw it. But he's remade it now, English language version, with Julianne Moore in the title role as a woman in her basically turning over the 50 on the calendar. She's divorced. She has a grown son, played by Michael Cera, and she discovers sort of a new passion in her life, is going out to clubs and dancing. And one night at a club, she meets another divorcee, played by John Turturro, and they strike up a relationship. And that's basically kind of the driving force of this film. They each have some baggage that comes with it, with them. Julianne Moore's ex-husband, played by Brad Garrett, is kind of a bundle of emotions, a very uncomfortable dinner scene midway through the film. And John Turturro is still very, he has grown daughters and a very sort of needy ex-wife, and he still has a real attachment to them, and that causes complications within their relationship. So that's sort of basically the driving force of the plot.
Okay, hang on a second, Eric. We'll take a quick break, okay?
Okay.
And then we can jump into what we thought about the movie. We're talking about Gloria Bell. Eric, hang on. Talking about Gloria Bell. This is Julianne Moore's latest movie. It's out right now, and then we got one more movie to talk about, and then box office, and Eric will tell us all about some of the other movies he saw at South by Southwest Film Festival. So that's all coming up. We got a break here for the news, and we will get to that after. We'll get back to the movies after the news right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we are here until 5 a.m. It's Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke, because it's a jokey time. We're going to talk about good movies that have absurd scenes, some iconic movie scenes that actually weren't planned, and much more on the movie side. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. It is Monday morning, and that means we review the movies. Jim Leskowski is off this week. He'll be back next week. But Eric Childress is here. We're going to talk about box office, and he's going to tell us a little bit more about some of the movies he saw South by Southwest Film Festival that he was at last week. But before the break, Eric told us about the plot to Gloria Bell, the new Julianne Moore film. Okay, Eric, let's continue.
Okay, so I gave you the basic story of the film. And, you know, anytime you get Julianne Moore and John Turturro together in a movie and you're going to make them the central relationship, you already got something going for your movie. Turturro hasn't had a role as good as this in some time. And Julianne Moore, who, you know, is almost incapable of giving, you know, an uninteresting performance, is quite good here as well. So the scenes between the two of them are really exemplary. I mentioned that the dinner scene in the middle of the film is kind of the centerpiece dinner sequence that's really awkwardly staged and really uncomfortable to watch, particularly for one of the characters. But I gotta say that the third act of this film really kind of left a sour taste in my mouth, because there's behavior that one character indulges in just seemed really abrupt and out of place, even for an actual human being. It just seemed completely out of character for him, and it really kind of bothered me, because it just seemed like an easy setup for the Julianne Moore character to gain some sort of closure, so she can end up dancing to the Laura Branigan song by the end of the film, and we're not supposed to roll our eyes at that. I actually did quite heavily, and I couldn't, you know, walking away from the movie, you know, thinking about how much I liked the scenes between the two of them, and you know, if you know, whatever was going to happen to these characters, I was completely involved in. To see that turn just didn't ring true for me. It seemed completely out of place, even with the baggage that character was carrying, and I walked away going, like, I don't really believe in where this film ended up going. I would say, you know, it's definitely worth seeing for the performances, but you know, just be aware that it's going to take a turn, and I guess depending on how you're feeling about the movie at that point, you may root on one character and jeer another character, but that's not the way I wanted to leave this film.
Okay, it didn't bother me. I was with it pretty much all the way through until the end, and it's carried by these performances, because this cast is it's not just Julianne Moore and John Turturro. The rest of them, I mean, this is a really stellar cast. And everybody's very good at it. But the stuff between Julianne Moore and John Turturro is great. Now, they have never been in a movie. They're both in Lebowski, but they don't have any scenes together.
I was just thinking about that, trying to think. Like, they seem like they've probably been in like 7 movies together.
That's what it feels like. I think Lebowski is it.
Right.
They didn't have any scenes together. They have no scenes together because, you know, the Jesus is not in any scenes with her.
Right.
Man, they're good. I mean, well, that's because they're Julianne Moore and John Turturro. That kind of goes without saying that, you know, you get two of the best actors on the planet and put them into a movie and have that be the sort of the romantic element of the film. And Julianne Moore is really, I mean, the scenes with her and Turturro, because there are times when she just has, like, no patience for Turturro. And, you know, and those scenes are hilarious. Like, really, really, mm-hmm. really, really funny. And there's a lot going on between the two of them. And, you know, all of the other supporting characters, I think, are interesting. And I was with it until the end. I can understand why you had the reaction that you had, Eric.
Mm-hmm.
But I was with it pretty much till the end. And I really liked it. And anytime you get a chance to see Julianne Moore, you know, just, like, you know, eat up the scenery, which she does here. It's a joy. And just, you know, the bouncing off the stuff with her and Turturro is great. So just, I really enjoyed this movie. I was emotionally attached to it. And I can't even, you know, we could just go on and on and on about how great these actors are and how great.
Yeah, they're both kings and queens.
Exactly. So I'm recommending it. I'm recommending Gloria Bell. All right, Eric.
You're making me do this, huh?
Yeah. Because can you attempt to explain?
Can we try this together?
I mean, we're talking about this movie. This movie, Captive State, is what it's called. Okay,
yeah.
And they're advertising it as some sort of like alien invasion movie. John Goodman's in it. Takes mm-hmm. place in a futuristic Chicago that has payphones that take quarters.
That's right.
So should we attempt to even try to?
Yeah, because I think people need to understand why we're so confused by this movie.
Seriously, Eric, it could be the most incomprehensible film that I have ever seen in my life.
Yeah, and it's a fine line between incomprehensible and just flat out incompetent. And, this movie was supposed to screen for critics several weeks ago, and then they pulled the screening, and then they didn't screen it anywhere.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that maybe it was just going to be a Chicago thing because of the Chicago connection, but I watched this movie, and people are just like, well, it's not that bad. And I'm like, well, no, it kind of is.
Who says it's not that
bad? I get why they didn't screen it.
Who says it's not that bad?
I've seen many people say it's not that bad.
Are you kidding me?
Nope. They're not recommending it, but they said that it wasn't as bad as some of the movies that haven't been screened for critics.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, let's attempt here at some sort of way to describe what this movie is about.
Well, you are correct in that it is an alien invasion movie, which is established in the first 5-6 minutes of the film, this you know, exposition-heavy prologue, where the aliens have come down, and somehow, for some reason, which is never fully explained, the human race capitulates to the aliens, just allows them to, you know, okay, you won, you know, surrender, you won. And not just that, you know, so it doesn't turn into, like, a kind of like a Falling Skies television show where it's just, you know, V, for example, where, you know, the resistance, you know, you find out what the aliens are up to, you know, and it's certainly not a quiet place either where they've just wiped out all the humans and there's a few left and they have to survive. So it's like none of those movies, okay? Here, the human race has given up, and not just given up, but have decided to work with the aliens. I don't know how that works.
Right.
But so they've decided to work with the aliens, and they have closed off certain sections of the United States and presumably the world for what they call closed zones. I don't really know what the purpose of the closed zones are, but okay. So Ashton Sanders from Moonlight plays a kid who, in the prologue, witnesses his parents murdered by the aliens. They laser blast their car, the two parents die, and him and his brother, you know, grow up orphans. So flash forward years later, Ashton Sanders roaming the streets of Chicago. His brother is presumably dead. John Goodman plays a cop.
And his older brother is like this hero. He's like a rebellion, hero.
Right, he's Quado.
Yeah,
who's basically
right.
I'm just trying to help people out here.
It's not. Keep trying.
So John Goodman is a cop, and he's, you know, like working with the aliens. He also has a side gig where he visits a prostitute in the closed zone, played by Vera Farmiga. Which is, like, baffled me because, like, she shows up in the first 10 minutes and then doesn't show up again for, like, an hour.
Yeah.
So, I'm like, what the hell is going on with that?
Yeah.
And it just turns out to be a big piece, but whatever. But Goodman knows Ashton Sanders' character and is trying to find him. So maybe they could, they believe the brother might not be dead. Meanwhile, the movie just shifts in the second act to this giant resistance conspiracy plot to blow up something at Soldier Field,
right.
A rally at Soldier Field.
Right. All right, hang on, Eric. We got to continue.
Yeah.
We have to take a break.
Do we?
I got to take a break. All right, hang on a second.
Oh, God.
Eric Childress and I are trying to make sense of Captive State. I don't even know where. Seriously, I don't even know where to begin with this movie. But we'll try to clear it all up after we take a break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on WGN here till 5 a.m. It is a Monday morning, and that means my dad's going to tell a joke. We're doing the movie reviews right now. We'll talk box office. And then another the final wrap-up report from Eric Childress, who was at South by Southwest Film Festival last week. And we'll get exclusive reviews of some of the movies that he saw. So let's welcome Eric back. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
All right, we're trying to make sense of this movie, Captive State.
Doing our best.
Trying. So,
yeah.
All right, so you said that, you talk about the second act of the movie where suddenly we're following these, a bunch of characters that are part of a rebellion, and they're going to put something on some guy's back, and then...
Whom we've never met, by the way.
Exactly. You don't know who he is. I don't even know. I mean, he was a politician of some kind.
Yes.
There was a rally, like a unity rally at Soldier Field.
Yeah.
They were going to do like a sort of like an anti, like a sort of terrorist attack, blowing something up at Soldier Field, and I still don't know what.
Right.
Lots of shots of people walking down the street carrying suitcases.
Yeah.
And there's the nonstop suspenseful score throughout the entire movie.
Yeah.
All right. So okay. So there's that.
Yeah, and I guess for an alien invasion, considering that they managed to make us give up, Chicago's remarkably intact.
Yeah.
I mean, I know this is it's supposed to be a low budget film. It's supposed to be a different type of alien invasion movie. That's fine. That's all noble and stuff. But you got to have some ideas going for it.
Yeah,
and I think
what's really funny though is that they just keep mentioning Pilsen and Wicker Park throughout the entire.
Yeah, Pilsen, oh my God, Pilsen! I mean, take a drink every time someone says Pilsen in the movie.
It's ridiculous.
Crazy.
And then like they destroyed Wicker Park. Wicker Park is just, what are we doing here in Wicker Park? At one point,
right.
The guy says,
"Do you remember Wicker Park? Remember what happened to Wicker Park?" and I'm just thinking like that movie with Josh Hartnett. Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, no, and it's really funny is because like. Seeing this movie, because there were about eight people in the theater when we went, and obviously we'll go through the box office. Nobody saw this movie. And people were just like, at all the mentions of like Pilsen and Wicker Park and everything, it was just so forced. It was like,
hey, wink, wink, we know a couple Chicago locations.
Exactly. There's a couple of neighborhoods we've heard of.
Like, we know these two places and Soldier Field.
Oh, my God. Okay, so... All right. So then now here's the other thing. When the movie does shift into this sort of like we're following these rebellion people around, you know, Soldier Field and everything, the main character drops out. Like, he's gone.
Yes,
I mean,
he's
like,
gone.
The person that we're supposed to be following is, like, literally, they put him in a room at
right.
one point. He's in a room, and, like, the aliens somehow surround the room?
Yeah.
And he's in there for, like...
Yeah, he's trapped.
He's
walled off from the rest of the movie, and it's like, okay, now movie, like, okay, audience, here's a new cast of characters for you. We're
right.
not going to tell you who they are or what connection they have to each other.
Right.
But they're doing something, and it is like that whole sequence, which is really, I mean, it's like the whole second act of the movie, practically. I just kept one of my favorite Mystery Science Theater lines is, you're like, you know, if we pretend what's happening, this is actually kind of exciting.
Yeah, no, I know, but everybody seemed very intense.
Yeah.
You know, everything was happening, and like I said, the score is nonstop. Like, it's we're supposed to be like, oh my God, this is really suspenseful. What's going to happen
right.
to these characters, even though I have no idea who they are.
Right.
What they're doing. I don't know what the hell is happening in this movie. I mean, I seriously was sitting in the theater just like, my parents and I saw this thing together. And
oh, God.
Oh, yeah. No. And when it was over, my dad goes, what the hell was that? And I'm like, I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like they're shipping people who are not capitulating to the aliens off someplace.
Yeah, and then...
You know, like, they don't explain any of that. So it's just like, what are all these people come to this rally at Soldier Field, and like, what is the benefit other than not going to this other place? Like, and is that going to make you cheering and all this kind of stuff? Like,
I mean,
the idea that the world, let alone Chicago, would just go like, okay, AS, we lost.
Yeah.
And then, like, none of that made any sense to me.
And I didn't know what the subplot with Kevin Dunn. I had no idea what the hell was going on there. I don't know what the relationship between him and Goodman was.
No.
I don't know what the hell Goodman was doing. I don't know. I mean, he's very, very serious in it.
Yes.
You know, he does not crack a smile throughout the entire movie, and he's wearing very serious glasses.
Yep.
And I didn't know where his allegiance was. I didn't know what his motivation was. I have no idea what happened in the final scene of the movie. I don't understand. I had no clue. I don't know what's happening right now.
Well, I can explain that to you off the air, but I don't want to spoil anyone this experience.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, so like his entire motivation is summed up in the last 5 minutes of the movie.
Right.
That basically everyone's connected. Whatever.
Also. Wait, did Kevin J. O'Connor lose a bet? What is?
Well, in Chicago, it's legally obligated.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I love Kevin. You know, and I have to find out what the hell happened with this movie because you know, because I know Kevin, so I can ask him and go, you want to explain this to me?
There's a moment in the final act of the movie where John Goodman has to explain everything to the agency that he's a part of.
Right.
You know, and he's in this room, and all I kept thinking, I'm just like, is he playing the same character he played in Red State? Because you remember that in Red State, he does this entire speech, and it's great in Red State because
at
least Kevin Smith's doing the dialogue, and it's kind of funny. But here, it's just like, and like it leads up to reveal, and I'm just like, is he in trouble? Kevin Dunn like gives like this look, like, oh my God, and then John Goodman's like, yeah, whatever.
I know.
I'm like, is he being punished?
What's going on here? I have no idea. I didn't know what was going on the entire movie. I swear to God, I sat there, I was like, What the hell is happening? I don't know. I don't know who what's going on. I don't know what the situations are. I don't know who these characters are. I don't know what D.B. Sweeney shows up in one scene beating up a guy. And he's in one scene.
Yeah.
And so it leads me to believe that there is a longer version of this that maybe the director wanted to do that because it feels like it's a movie that's been chopped up and like randomly put back together. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and given that this movie was supposed to come out last August, it's very possible that they did a bunch of changes to it. I mean, I thought at the time that it was like too close to A Quiet Place. They didn't want to, you know, make that comparison.
Right.
People go in there thinking this is going to be like full-on alien resistance fighting. Think again.
No, that's not it. Nothing like that occurs. And the alien design is boring,
stupid,
and the alien ship that just kind of floats above Lake Michigan a couple of times, and I was like, "What is it? I was shaking my head trying to figure out what the hell was happening through this entire movie. Now, the director of this movie is Rupert Wyatt,
yeah,
who also co-wrote it, so he's got no one to blame but himself.
That's right.
And I really am now. I'm convinced that Rise of the Planet of the Apes was a fluke. There's no question about it, because he did the he did the remake of The Gambler, which wasn't very good. What else did he direct?
There was a prison drama with Brian Cox, I think, called The Escapist.
The Escapist,
I think, was the name of it.
Yeah,
the movie he did before Apes.
Yeah, and he directed a bunch of episodes, and he was executive producer and directed a bunch of episodes of The Exorcist, the TV the TV show, which should also tell you, you know, what's going on there.
Right.
But this is just a complete disaster and mess, and I don't even know what to make of it. It barely qualifies as a movie. I had no idea what was happening throughout the entire movie. No.
And it is such a colossal waste of John Goodman.
Oh my God.
I mean, finally gets above the line, you know, credits in a movie, and he's got the most screen time in the movie of any actor.
Yeah.
And it's so disappointing to watch him kind of. I mean, I bet he could tell. I'd like to hear from him, because he clearly signed on to this thinking that there was something to this.
Yeah,
and I bet there is a somewhat more interesting cut out there, because this thing is just an absolute chop job.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. And here's it's quite an accomplishment when you make John Goodman uninteresting.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Because it's almost impossible to not love John Goodman in any capacity, whether it's drama or comedy or whatever.
And Rupert Wyatt knows that, too, because he's so good in The Gambler remake that you mentioned.
Right, exactly.
Goodman's so good in that.
Yeah, he was the best thing in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, and then, like, Alan Ruck shows up. I don't know, was he just... Still, was he just hanging out waiting for Ferris Bueller?
I think he was in town for a Ferris Bueller anniversary, and he was like, "Hey, we're shooting a movie."
I swear to you. And then there were like some actor people that I know that were in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that I've known through theater, because there's a ton of Chicago actors in this movie because it was shot here, and I don't even remember them shooting this thing here.
Yeah, I don't remember that either. I honestly do not remember ever hearing that they were shooting. Like, it popped up on IMDb. I'm just like, oh, this is set in Chicago. Cool.
Yeah, yeah. I had no idea. So again, apparently Goodman was in town filming this at some point. We don't know when.
Right.
I mean, it was supposed to come out last August. It was probably 3 years ago when they shot this thing.
Mm-hmm.
But my God, I mean, I had no idea what was happening. And I'm telling you right now, when we were walking out of the theater, I saw this movie at the Village Crossing in Skokie.
Uh-huh.
And so when it was over, first of all, my parents and I were just looking at each other like, what was that? What was that?
And then, I mean, I have to believe, Nick, and you know, I hate bringing politics into our movie reviews at all, but I have to believe that somewhere in Rupert Wyatt's mind, when he either was writing this thing or when he was making it or editing it, that he, you know, like the idea of that, you know, that half a country is going to get around a force in this country that, you know, is just not good for us.
Yeah.
I mean, that's because I'm watching that rally. I'm like, okay, this is an outdoor rally of this political figure. I wonder what that's supposed to mean.
Right. Well, it doesn't mean anything because none of it makes
sense.
All right. All right. Well, listen, captive state, and nobody went to see it, and we'll talk about that. Eric, hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right. We did our best, everybody. Seriously, if you saw this movie over the weekend, you have absolutely every idea why Eric and I just struggled trying to figure out how to talk about Captive State, a movie that makes absolutely no sense. All right, well, we got more coming up right after this on 720 WGN.
Yeah.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here until 5. It is Monday morning, and we are going to get a joke from my dad. We are going to talk about good movies that have absurd scenes, iconic movie scenes that actually weren't planned, and much more. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text, and you can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected with us on Facebook. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right, Eric Childress is hanging out with us. We just finished reviewing a couple of movies, and we welcome Eric back. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, let's talk about the box office, and then we'll jump into some South by Southwest movies.
Okay.
All right, Captain Marvel again for its second weekend, $69 million. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's very impressive. I mean, there's been 24 films in history that have made $60 million or more in its second weekend. So that movie is right up there. Now the question is whether or not it's going to reach $400 million, which was a milestone that I guessed it could possibly make. I suggested the Hunger Games numbers when we were talking about this weeks ago, and it's definitely got a shot. I mean, 20 of the 24 films that have achieved $60 million in the second weekend have gone on to gross $400 million or more.
Yeah,
and this is now the 17th Marvel property, not all in the cinematic universe per se, but the 17th Marvel property to gross over $750 million worldwide.
Wow,
and it is at $760 million already.
And people wonder why we get 12 comic book movies a year.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, I was wondering how the global box office was going to be on this, given that Wonder Woman is a far more famous character, more well known character.
Yeah.
And that only did like $400 million worldwide. So I was wondering, is this going to be like this kind of like a sexist thing going on? But apparently not. And I got to think that just Marvel knows exactly how to brand these things. And it might be something that DC is still behind the curve globally too, because how they couldn't get Wonder Woman to greater numbers with an international actress like that, it's kind of baffling. But Captain Marvel is about set to pass Wonder Woman globally at the box office.
Wow! All right. Well, I mean, that's pretty amazing. It really
is.
I mean, obviously people are enjoying the movie. There's no question about it. Okay, so Wonder Park came in second with $16 million. Was that expected around those?
Yeah, it's a little less. I think it's suspect. I think some people were thinking even lower. Some people were thinking maybe in the low 20s. I mean, I was sort of thinking of somewhere around the teens, like 17, 18 million, which is not good, because this movie costs somewhere close to $100 million. People who don't know the history of this movie actually like started back in 2014. The director was fired for inappropriate conduct on the set, and the movie's actually been released without a director's credit.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't even hear about this story. I had no idea what happened there.
Yeah, I guess in 2017, probably maybe right in the middle of all the Weinstein stuff that was happening, this came out that he had some inappropriate conduct with some women on the set, and he was fired, and they went forward finishing the movie without him, and the movie now opens without a director's credit.
Wow. Okay, that's an unusual thing right there.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, all right. And then number three was 5 Feet Apart with $13.1 million. That seems about right, correct?
Yeah. I mean, it's not going to certainly break any records, but, you know, the movie only costs $7 million, and if it's something that gets Haley Lou Richardson more work, I'm all for it.
Yeah. I'm really interested in seeing the movie mainly because of her.
Exactly.
Because she's so great.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. And then four is How to Train Your Dragon, Hidden World, $9.3 million. It's only $135 million total.
Yeah, but over $466 million worldwide, so it's already in the profit.
Okay.
Domestically, it's not going to do as much as the second movie did, but it is a success.
Okay. Tyler Perry's A Medea Family Funeral, $8 million, that made $59 million total. That's what I mean. These movies don't cost anything, right?
No, they don't cost much at all. I mean, he's gotten the budgets down for this, so it's down to like $20 million. So this one's going to be a success, and it looks like it's going to be the third highest grossing film of his career.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. He's not going to do Madea anymore. So.
After the number, these numbers, they might bring him back.
Yeah, maybe.
Or her back.
All right. And then number six is No Manches Frida 2. 3.8 million.
Yeah, part of Lionsgate's Pantaleone line of films. Basically did as much as the first No Manches Frida did a couple years ago, so it's kind of right on point.
Okay. Number seven, The Incomprehensible Captive State.
Yes.
$3.1 million.
Yeah, $3.1 million. This is actually the lowest grossing film for opening weekend for a wide release that Focus Features has ever released.
And they've released a lot of movies that didn't make any money.
Oh yes, they absolutely have. And you know, I mean, primarily they've platformed a lot of things. They open stuff in limited release and then platform them around Oscar time and stuff like that. But they have done more than their share of wide releases. And this one, you know, this is coming a couple weeks off of Greta, which. A couple weeks ago, I said that was the lowest that they ever had. Now this is, and it's actually, as people want to pay attention to per theater averages, it is the eighth worst per theater average in their history.
Oh my God!
Even amongst limited releases.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. And word of mouth is not going to help.
Oh no.
All right, number eight is the Lego Movie 2, the second part. That just barely over 100 million.
Yeah, this is a bust for Warner Brothers. This is their biggest bust in some time, and it's really unfortunate. I don't know what happened with this series. Why it just kind of just flatlined so quickly?
Yeah, I'm really shocked by those numbers. I really am, considering how big the first one was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's disappointing because it's such a good movie.
Yep.
All right. Number nine is Alita: Battle Angel. That's up to 81 million.
Yeah. Still not a success for them.
Yeah. And then number 10 is Green Book, man. Just really chugging along.
Yeah. People still going to see it in theaters despite it actually coming out on DVD this past week.
Yeah. That's unbelievable. $82.6 mm-hmm. million. And it really did get a boost for from the Oscars.
Yeah, who says people don't go see movies in theaters?
That's true. That's true. Mm-hmm. All right, here's your here's the question.
Yeah,
how much money is Us going to make next week?
It's a very good question.
I think it's going to make a ton of money.
Oh, I think a ton of money. Yes. Just what do we define as a ton, though? Do we define it because Get Out did $33 million? Okay, so it's going to be higher than that.
It will be higher than 30. There's no question about it. Higher than 33.
But are we talking 60 or like 80? 80, we're getting in, you know, real high territory.
Yeah.
It's hard to say. Because like I said, people are going to be all up for this movie, the horror fans. I mean, this is a horror movie.
Yeah.
Okay, this is a horror movie. So it's going to even take some of the Get Out people probably off guard.
Yeah.
Word of mouth will be interesting too to see where it goes from there. But I'm thinking somewhere in the 60 to 70 million range.
Yeah, I don't think that's outrageous to think that. I really don't. So many people are looking forward to this movie. You know, lots of people are really looking forward to it. I've been getting texts from friends and stuff saying, "Hey, have you seen Us yet?" And I'm like, "No, I'm going to see it when it opens on the weekend." And it's just going to be. I think the numbers are going to be really huge.
I think they are too. And people are just like, is it going to outgross Get Out? If it has a big enough opening weekend like that, it has a very good chance because I think the people who really love this movie are going to go back for repeat viewings because there's a lot to process the first time.
Yeah,
and you're going to want to go back and see how everything fits.
Yeah.
In the construct the second time.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Well, I cannot wait.
Yeah.
To see this again.
Yeah. Well, I'm very excited. Obviously, I'm way excited to see this movie. All right. So that's Us. That's what we. That's clearly will be number one next week. It's just a question of how much money is it going to make.
Yep.
All right. Okay, Eric. Why don't we take a quick break? Okay.
Okay.
And then we come back, you got some South by Southwest movies to talk about, correct?
Yeah.
All right, cool. All right, so Eric Childress is with us, and he goes to all the film festivals during the year, and he was he talked to us live from Austin last week at the South by Southwest Film Festival. Well, he's back, and he's got more movies to talk about from that festival, and we will do that after we take a quick break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, the Monday morning movie reviews with Jim Liskowski and Eric Childress. Jim is off this week, so it's just been me and Eric. We reviewed the new movies. We talked about the box office, but Eric just returned from the South by Southwest Film Festival, and he's giving us exclusive reviews of the movies that he saw down in Austin. All right, Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, now overall, was it a good fest?
I would say about an average fest. This is the things that I saw, and a lot of the stuff that I really liked are actually really big premieres. That's some that we talked about last week. Many that are going to be coming out several months down the road. Pick up a few really nice discoveries, but there were a lot of disappointments on the back end too. A couple of which we'll cover here tonight. The good stuff is really good. And the bad stuff, pretty disappointing.
Mm. Okay, cool. Well, let's start. Where do you want to go?
Okay. Last week we talked about a bunch of these premieres I mentioned. Us, obviously, Long Shot, Booksmart, Olivia Wilde's film, which kind of really blew up at South by this year. But the one that we didn't get to talk about because it premiered Monday night is the movie Good Boys.
Okay.
Which is not opening until August, and this is the Seth Rogen, Evan Goldberg produced film starring the fantastic Jacob Tremblay as a trio of sixth graders with very filthy mouths who go on this crazy day adventure. Like Booksmart, some people might make a comparison to Superbad, that involves Jacob Tremblay really wanting to go to this popular party that's also going to be a kissing party so he could kiss the girl that he's in love with. But along the way, they have encounters with some really strange characters, including a pair of teenage girls that have unwittingly let them take their aspirin bottle full of drugs with them, and it's a whole procedure getting the drugs back and whether or not, all this kind of stuff. So it sounds like a stunt movie. Let's take the most adorable, greatest child actor of his generation and put him in the good son. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
But this is a comedy. This is a full-blown comedy, it sounds like a stunt. It sounds like let's put Jacob Tremblay and make him do South Park.
Right.
But this movie is so funny and really has so much heart to it. People who might think that they're going to be uncomfortable watching these six, people who were ever in sixth grade, they know how kids talk.
Yeah.
I'm sure you and I are both sailors in sixth grade.
Oh, yeah.
So you have, these kids together, and even the stuff that you might squirm at, the fact that they're carrying around drugs, let's just say that the fact that they're carrying around drugs in a aspirin, a child-proof cap thing that they can't get off. Okay? So it's stuff like that, and there's all kinds of, like these kids, other than their mouths, are, completely pure and innocent. There's all kinds of, messages about consent and drugs and, friendship. It fits right into those movies, like Superbad and other things where, the friendship is really sort of the key thing. And here that you got sixth graders involved, there's actually, it's at this point in their lives where they start to realize that maybe these friends aren't going to be my friends forever.
Hmm.
But they're still the best friends ever at the time. And I found this movie I laughed so hard throughout this movie. And it's really funny. It's moving at times. Jacob Tremblay is the king. But there's an actor, one of the boys is played by an actor named Kevin L. Williams, who just about steals this movie. He had two line readings in the movie that I doubled over hurting with laughter in the film. I'm looking forward to people seeing this movie. I can't wait to see it again. I want to show it to people. It just made me laugh so hard. The movie called Good Boys.
Okay, so that's Good Boys. Doesn't open here until August.
Yeah.
So we got a little ways to go. All right. Sounds like it's going to be funny, man. Sounds like, it looks something that I would look forward to. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, and the director of the movie is Gene Stupinski and Lee, I think Eisenberg, is his last name, and they were writers on The Office and Hello Ladies.
Yeah.
So they got really good pedigrees in television. Their movies don't look up their screenplays. I'll just say that.
Okay.
But the Hello Ladies and The Office they did some really great stuff, and they do it here again with Good Boys.
Okay. All right. Okay. What else did you see at South by Southwest that you want to mention?
A movie called Run This Town. They didn't tell you a lot about what this movie is. I mean, here's what the basic line of the movie is. It says, "The inner workings of a city seen through the eyes of the interns and assistants that run it."
All right.
Okay, that's what it says on IMDb. In the South by Southwest program book, it's basically about this kid who graduates and wants to become a journalist. He gets a job at a local Canadian newspaper, kind of the low rung. He has to do really bad, lame stories and things like that. And he's looking for his big break. And then he comes across this potential video that's out there of the local Canadian mayor smoking crack.
Mm.
And that's where you go, oh, it's this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Rob Ford story.
Okay, all right.
Okay, mm-hmm. As told through the eyes of the journalists and interns who run the city. Okay, if you know who plays Rob Ford in this movie?
I'm looking at it now, and I can't believe it.
Right.
I'm looking at the IMDb page now. How is that possible?
A lot of makeup.
That Damian Lewis plays Rob Ford.
Yeah. And I got to say, Damian Lewis is, again, the king.
Yeah.
And, he seems incapable. I mean, I like him in Dreamcatcher.
He's great in Dreamcatcher.
Yes, he's great in it.
Yeah.
Yes. He seems incapable of giving an uninteresting performance, and he's good. He's very good as Rob Ford. The makeup, though, makes him look like Fat Bastard from Austin Powers.
Oh, no.
Yeah. The whole movie, I'm just, get in my belly the entire time watching him. But he's so good, it momentarily forget about that.
Right.
As for the movie, because he's only a supporting character in this story. This is about the race to whether or not someone's going to get the video, produce the video, put the video out there in the ether. It's a movie directed by a young director who bit off a bit more than he could chew with this story. You could tell right away it's very ambitious. The opening scene, it's overlapping dialogue, and he's using split screens and introducing multiple characters and all this kind of stuff. Much better than Captive State, I'll say that much. Mm. But just the whole movie feels over-directed, and there's very... there's like not a likable person in the entire movie. Even the lead journalist, the kid who's in, I forget his actor's name, but he's in Pitch Perfect, and I actually saw him in Book of Mormon here in Chicago. Good actor, but just the character is so unlikable, and he's the kind of journalist that all the adults in the room have to go like, dude, you don't have the story. You don't have it. You can't do this. Jennifer Ellie plays the editor of the paper, and she's the best thing about the movie, save for Damian Lewis, because she's at least trying to keep this kid, in his lane. I just wish she had done it for the director, too.
Mm. Okay. All right, so that's Run This Town. Was this picked up or anything?
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet. But given that, just the curiosity of Damian Lewis as Rob Ford, someone will probably take a stab at it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's get another one in here.
Okay. Actually, a local production.
Okay.
We've had a couple, over the years, we've had some, Chicago doesn't seem to make it into Sundance much, but South by Southwest is very good to them. There's a film called St. Francis. The star of the movie, Kelly O'Sullivan, who also wrote the film, she plays one of these, you know, like a 30-ish, mid-30s female in Chicago, doesn't really have a job, doesn't really have a great direction in life. Not a, you know, a bad person or anything like that, but just is kind of missed out on her opportunities. She ends up getting a job as a nanny to kind of a upper middle class lesbian couple, the movie is about the relationship between not just her and the young girl that she watches over, but really a loving relationship to the guy she met that leads to some complications in her personal life, as well as also just trying to the minefield of the kind of the postpartum depression that's actually going on within the house that she resides under for half of her day now.
Okay. All right, Eric, hang on.
Sure.
Hang on a second. Eric's going to tell us more about actually a film that was shot here, made here, St. Francis, which he saw at South by Southwest. And we'll get more about that right after we take a break here on 720 WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Monday morning. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke. We got to talk about some good movies that have absurd scenes and iconic movie scenes that actually weren't planned. Happy accidents. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. And Eric Childress is with us. Telling us all about some of the movies that he saw at South by Southwest. And before the break, Eric was telling us about a movie called St. Francis. So, Eric, go ahead.
Okay. I was describing this film. We've kind of seen movies like this many times like this before. Directionless lead character, you know, kind of finds meaning and through her experiences with others, especially when there's a child involved. St. Vincent, for example, with Bill Murray, is a film kind of like that. Obviously, a much older character, but this one has a lot of heart to it. It really does. It's really nicely acted. Kelly O'Sullivan's very good in the lead role. The young actress who plays the child in the movie, a package of adorable, and is really good too. And it's a movie that doesn't feel like just a package of cliches. It feels like there's real heart, genuine emotion in it. The characters don't just feel like one note caricatures on the paper. It takes turns, weird turns through life are unexpected, and the kind of things that life brings us. So it doesn't feel like something that's just kind of manufactured. It feels something kind of lived in. So I enjoyed it very much, and it's a real crowd pleaser.
Okay, cool. All right, and has that one been picked up or anything?
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet, but local production, from what I understand, just like everyone except like two people involved in the entire production are from Chicago.
Good.
Yeah.
That's nice. All right, mm-hmm. Cool. All right, where do you want to go next?
Where do I want to go next? Let me tell you about another good one that I saw. This is probably the biggest surprise I saw at the festival. It's a movie called Olympic Dreams.
Okay.
And it was shot in the background of the Seoul, the Korea, the Winter Games, an actual Olympian, now turned actress and writer, she actually wrote this film as well, named Alexi Pappas, plays a cross-country skier. She's, alone at Olympic Village. She doesn't really know anyone, doesn't really have any friends, very early on in the film, we see her competition. Things don't go great for her. And then it's just basically a lot of sitting around waiting. Like, you know, what do you do when everything you worked up to in your life, turns out to be less than stellar? And then you have to sit around and think about it for several days away from home, away from everyone you know. But interesting enough, there is a dentist at Olympic Village played by Nick Kroll. He is also in the same boat, doesn't really know anyone. He keeps trying to make friends with all the Olympians by giving them cavity advice and everything. And he ends up making friends with this young woman. He has a fiance back home. And she's very lonely. So there's definitely a Lost in Translation feel to this film. It's very inescapable, and that's clearly an inspiration for this film. But the two lead performances by Alexi Pappas and Nick Kroll are really fantastic. I don't think Nick Kroll has ever been better in a movie before. And it's while he does gets to do some laugh lines, there's not a comedic performance in the slightest. It's the most vulnerable I've ever seen Nick Kroll on screen before. It really kind of floored me, I think, how good he is in this movie. Alexi Pappas is the star of the movie. She matches him all the way through. This was one that really, I really felt this movie. This was a real special piece of work. And again, the Lost in Translation comparisons are going to be there, but focusing on the two lead performances, it's hard to say that it's just a mere copycat.
Okay, cool. So that's Olympic Dreams. Very cool. I've always been a fan of Nick Kroll's. I think he's great. I would love to see him do some serious stuff, you know.
I've come around because I've liked what he's been doing in films recently. I really like My Blind Brother. Like, I thought he was really good in that.
Yeah. He was really terrific.
But he's always been like, every time I see Nick Kroll, I think, well, there's Nick Kroll.
Yeah.
You know, and now then you'll see in these performances that he's doing, it's nice to see him kind of shed, you know, the goofball that, you know, that we know and love.
Right.
From him, and as I'm telling you, I mean, I'm watching this and I'm like, man, he's good in this movie.
All right, very cool. Very cool. Okay, that's Olympic Dreams. All right, where do you want to go next?
Let's see. Let's go to a film called The Day Shall Come.
Okay.
And this is the new film from Chris Morris, who did Four Lions.
Oh, sure.
Several years ago. Yeah. If people have not seen Four Lions, put that on your radar immediately.
Great movie.
Yes. And this one has very similar overtones and undertones to Four Lions. It deals with a kind of a makeshift urban family that is kind of trying to start their makeshift revolution. Things are just not going well. They don't have the funding for it. They don't, the main character might be a little mentally unstable. Maybe not dangerous, but maybe a little mentally not there. Around the bend is the FBI. And the FBI, one of them, an agent played by Anna Kendrick. They concoct a scheme to sort of boost up their own profiles, that if they can get this makeshift family kind of on the radar of the FBI and sort of trick them into actually committing a crime, that the FBI's profile will be boosted. It'll look like they're actually doing something on the war on terror, and, you know, this family is going to go to jail. So, again, very similar overtones and undertones to Four Lions.
Mm-hmm.
It actually feels at times like Chris Morris didn't get the reaction he wanted to out of Four Lions, and therefore had to redo it in a different way and do it with, you know, more mainstream actors. I mean, Riz Ahmed, obviously, back then, people didn't really know who he was.
Yeah.
But now they got Anna Kendrick front and center with this, and then maybe he can get some more butts and seats with this one. And I think it's good. I think it's a good film. It doesn't quite have the same bite as Four Lions did. It's definitely an angrier film, so it's not as outright funny. And I think there are times when he's almost trying to do like an Armando Iannucci kind of style, with especially with involving the scenes with the FBI, the kind of an absurdist stuff, and they're all expecting one another. And the problem I had with that is that a couple of the actors in the FBI scenes are not very good.
Okay. I think we're losing Eric. Are you Eric? Yep, we lost Eric. All right. We can get him back on real quick. Okay. All right, Eric, continue. You were talking about The Day Shall Come.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I'm sorry. I was on one of those payphones in Chicago. but yeah, so, like, watching the movie, watching even him kind of take some of the same beats on the finale even is very similar to what occurs in Four Lions. But, Anna Kendrick, again, just seems incapable of being uninteresting, particularly in comedic roles. And she's really good in this film, as are the actors who play the people who are trying to be part of this crazy conspiratorial plot that they have no business being a part of. It definitely gives you something to kind of make you go, about at the end of the film, the way that, minorities can be exploited for, gains within, the government.
Okay. All right. Well, okay, look, Eric, why don't we take a quick break and we come back a couple more titles, okay?
Okay.
All right. Eric Childress is with us. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, he'll tell us a couple more movies that he saw at South by Southwest this year. And we'll do that right after we break. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're talking with Eric Childress on this Monday morning. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke a little bit later on. We got a bunch of other stuff coming up. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Eric Childress is back. All right, Eric, a couple more movies that you saw in Austin this year.
Okay. One film that I think you might be interested in hearing about is called The Weeknd.
Okay.
And the reason you'd be interested in hearing about it is that it actually stars Sasheer Zamata from Saturday Night Live.
Oh.
Formerly. Of Saturday Night Live.
Okay.
Yeah, and in the movie, she plays a stand-up comedian who's not exactly having a great love life. She ends up going with her ex boyfriend and current kind of best friend to her parents' cabin up in the country. But he has decided to invite his current girlfriend along for the trip. Why she thought that wasn't going to happen, it's never quite that clear. But they end up going to get all together, and there's another gentleman at the house that she begins to take an interest in as well. So there's all kinds of weird friends dancing around the love triangle and stuff, and there's a very kind of My Best Friend's Wedding vibe to it, where she is almost kind of trying to sabotage the relationship a bit, and which is fine. I actually like that movie very much, but this movie is populated with, I said that the characters in Run This Town were unlikable. I hated every single person in this movie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this was probably the biggest shocking disappointment for me at the fest. I was really looking forward to this, not just for the prospect of Zamata getting something to do that she never got to do on Saturday Night Live, more than 4 minutes of screen time.
Yeah.
But it got really good reviews out of Toronto. It was really premiered at the Toronto Film Festival, and I missed it. And I thought that, I missed the gem.
Yeah.
I didn't. I really kind of hated this movie, and I particularly hated Zamata's character. I don't think she is sympathetic at all. Her stand-up kind of sucks. You not even like her professionally in the movie. What she kind of does to the characters. Her mom is horrible in this movie. She's not a likable character. I mean, the only one who's even remotely human is the other guy that's in and just kind of gets caught up in this.
Yeah.
And he wisely leaves. He's like, I'm getting out of here. This is ridiculous.
All right.
So by the end of it, I was just like, man, I was shocked. How much I really dislike this movie.
All right, so that's The Weeknd. Very disappointing. Okay, one more here. Yeah. One more here.
One more. One of the better horror films. There's still a couple of horror films I'm still looking to catch up with, including kind of a semi-sequel to Lucky McKee's The Woman.
Uh-oh.
Called Darlin'. Yeah, Pollyanna McIntosh, who played the woman in The Woman. I haven't seen this movie, but she plays the woman, and I guess it's her and the daughter that she takes. And she directed the movie as well.
Okay.
So I'm waiting to get a fresh link on that so I can see that, and I'd like to report that to you. But, one of the better midnight films that I saw, is a film called, Daniel Isn't Real.
Okay.
I was skeptical going into this movie, because it stars, it's the story of a guy who had kind of witnessed a traumatic event as a child and invented a imaginary friend. His mom is actually played by Mary Stuart Masterson. And she has a mental breakdown throughout the course of his childhood. So he bonds with this imaginary friend who he sees physically manifested throughout the film. And as he grows older and, things have not quite, the confidence in his own life isn't quite there, through the advice of his therapist, kind of reconjures the imaginary friend, who's played by Patrick Schwarzenegger, Arnold's son.
Okay.
And he's the dashing, confident, alpha male character that, he really wants to be, and it helps him out. For a while, it gets him a new girlfriend played by Sasha Lane. He's just more confident and manly and all the things that you hope for. But, the imaginary friend wants a little more than the other guy, the real guy, wants to give.
Right.
And the first half of the movie, the movie is actually pretty visually pretty interesting. It's not just kind of I thought this was actually going to be a little bit more of a comedy horror movie. Which it definitely is not. It actually kind of takes its themes pretty seriously, which I thought was a nice surprise. And I think the first half is pretty good because it actually deals with this idea of toxic masculinity and stuff that's so prominent these days. The second half gets a little more problematic. It's a little weirder. It's visually, it gets a little gorier in the second half, and then it kind of. It betrays its themes a little bit by making everything a little bit more supernatural in nature rather than, it's just an idea, a metaphor. When it gets a little more supernatural, it gets, slightly less interesting. But Patrick Schwarzenegger, it's very hard not to watch Arnold in him a little bit.
Yeah.
But he's good in the movie. It's definitely an interesting film. Like I said, it wasn't a great crop of midnight selections this year. The good one, the two that I hear were quite good, including Darling, I haven't seen.
Okay.
And the other one has CM Punk in it.
Okay.
And also a Chicago film called Girl on Third Floor. I heard very good things about both of those movies. But the Daniel Isn't Real of the ones that I saw was the best one.
Okay. All right. That's Daniel Isn't Real. All right, Eric. I appreciate you covering all these movies for us, man. And we will talk to you next week to talk about Jordan Peele's Us.
Oh, we're going to talk all about us.
It's going to be great. Okay. All right. Thanks, Eric.
Thank you.
There you go. Eric Childress, everybody. We'll take a break here on 720 WGN.
The numbers are in.
WGN Plus is where Chicago comes for podcasts.
Here's what's going on with WGN Plus. The Prickly City podcast is getting quite nervous these days. Or are they? Is it just a ploy? Is this all a lie? Getting Zen with Gen Z wants you to stop holding yourself back from achieving your goals. And the Corner Store is geeking out over a legend in the underground hip-hop scene here in the city, Sharkula. Look him up. WGN Plus on iTunes and Google Play.
All right. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. So after the news, which is coming up in just a couple of minutes, we're going to jump into iconic movie scenes that weren't planned. So some lucky mistakes here. Some really famous movie scenes just kind of happened. They weren't planned, and they just kind of happened, and they've turned out to be, you know, sort of legendary. So we're going to be talking about that, and my dad's going to call in and tell a joke. And if you want to jump in at any time, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Also, we are going to talk about otherwise good movies but have maybe one or two absurd scenes in them. Not every movie is perfect. So that's coming up. Again, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Really quickly, my next film club is Alfred Hitchcock's The Man Who Knew Too Much with Jimmy Stewart. And it's on Tuesday, April 9th. It's $10 to get in. Parking is free. Starts at 8 o'clock. It's over at the AMC Rosemont 18. And I hope you guys can make it out. It's very rare to see this kind of this movie on the big screen like that. And I'm very excited. I've never seen it on the big screen. I've seen it many times, but I've never seen it on the big screen. So I'm very, very excited about this one. So get your tickets now. They're on sale right now. You can reserve your seats right now. AMC Rosemont 18. Go to amctheaters.com. amctheaters.com. Reserve your seats right now. They'll be waiting for you on Tuesday, April 9th. Movie starts at 8. I'll introduce it, and then we'll talk about it afterwards. And stop by, have some dinner beforehand at Murray Brothers Caddyshack Restaurant, which is right down the street. And they offer the film clubbers 15% off on all their food. Great food, great place, really cool. So go in, have some dinner at the Caddyshack Restaurant, get your 15% off the food, and then come on over and see Alfred Hitchcock's The Man Who Knew Too Much. And again, that's Tuesday, April 9th. $10 to get in for the movie. Parking is free. And reserve your seats right now at amctheaters.com. amctheaters.com.